You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
Hello, welcome please to Telstra Customer Service. How may I be helping you?
Conform or be consumed.
Today is a very important day in Australia's history.
I heard a rumour today.
I like your rumours.
I know, as a parent, I would often say to my children, you've just spoken to this person for 8 hours at school, how can you sit online and chat to them for another 5 hours?
What is your environmental policy?
To sell Telstra.
You heard of road rage?
Yes.
What about web rage?
And within a few minutes.
Minutes?
Yeah, minutes. It's not minutes. XG, mate.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. There have been many technological revolutions over the years, but one stands head and shoulders above the rest. It's not the telephone becoming mobile, nor is it this fandangled internet thingy. It's actually the ubiquitous compact disc. The promise of taking sound reproduction from an analog format into a lossless digital format was not only appealing to the masses, it proved to be a technological milestone. Nearly everyone alive at the time can remember their first CD. Mine was Love Over Gold by Dire Straits. The CD is still evolving. When it first hit the market 25 years ago last Friday, it was really an audio-only device, or at least that's what we were being led to believe. But now, as we know, audio was just the beginning. The CD started life as an optical storage device which was capable of storing 70-odd minutes of music, before moving into the realm of computer data storage. We were amazed by the ability of such a small disc to store so much data, a concept which really revolutionised our way of thinking. It was August 17, 1982, and row upon row of palm-sized plates with a rainbow sheen began rolling off an assembly line near Hanover in Germany. It was an engineering marvel at the time. Those first CDs contained Richard Strauss's Alpine Symphony and would sound equally sharp if played today, says Holland's Royal Philips Electronics, which jointly developed the CD with Sony Corporation of Japan. Today, the CD has evolved into the DVD, which in turn mutated into Blu-ray and HD DVD formats. But in this ever-changing technological landscape, you have to wonder about the future of the compact disc. In an age of iPods, memory sticks, digital downloads, and the disposable Generation Y, I still believe the compact disc has got another 25 years in it at least, and possibly more. After all, the manufacturers all sold us on the fact that the CD, if it was looked after, could stand the test of time and at least 100 years. As for Love Over Gold, it's just turned 25 too, and looks and sounds as good as the day I bought it.
This week on Tech Talk Radio.
Skype experiences a major outage. The Wiki scanner reveals Big Brother is editing. Microsoft patches come thick and fast. And farmers are up in arms over NextG. All that and more on Australia's premier tech talk show, Tech Talk Radio. But first, let's find out what's been making news in the tech world this week with Graham Callaghan.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, the Xbox 360 Elite hits Australia. Acer wins a lucrative Bureau of Statistics contract. Telstra denies that NextG causes problems for the deaf. And the Australian Electoral Commission to provide electronic voting for the blind. Welcome to Tech Talk News. The highly popular Skype internet phone and chat service has suffered a major outage. According to notices on the Skype website, the problem was caused by a software issue which prevented the program from logging into the company's network. Skype's notices do not indicate the extent of the problem, but some reports estimate the number of users affected in the millions. At one stage, Skype stopped any new downloads of their client software, while their engineers continued to work on the problem. Affected users are advised to leave the software running, and it will connect automatically when the problem is resolved. Skype are also posting regular updates on their website. Microsoft have announced the release of the HDMI-equipped Xbox 360 Elite to the Australian market. The announcement comes hot on the heels of recent price cuts to both the Pro and Core versions of the Xbox 360 games console, which brought the Core version price in line with that of its competitor, the Nintendo Wii. The new model features an HDMI output to connect directly with high-definition screens and a 120GB hard disk. According to Microsoft, the Xbox 360 Elite has been designed with a high-end enthusiast audience in mind. To be released on August the 30th, a package which includes a black wireless controller and a headset will have a recommended retail price of around $730. Acer has secured a contract to supply the Australian Bureau of Statistics with more than 3,000 computers and monitors over 2 years in a deal tipped to be worth as much as $4 million. The ABS have selected Acer's Veriton 1000 model, which Acer claims is the smallest PC form factor PC in the world. The company also estimates that the systems can reduce power consumption by as much as 50%. Acer is now ranked by research groups as Australia's number 3 PC brand after Dell and HP. Senator Natasha Stott Despoja last week raised questions in Parliament over concerns that the transfer from CDMA to the new 3G network may cause problems for people with hearing aids or cochlear implants. With the CDMA network scheduled to be turned off in January, Telstra has denied that the switch will cause problems for the deaf and hearing impaired, claiming they have examined the possible impact of interference and expect no problems. A Telstra spokesman was also reported as saying that deaf users prefer NextG with its video calling functionality, as it allows them to use sign language over the mobile network. The Australian Electoral Commission has demonstrated new electronic voting equipment designed to allow the visually impaired to vote secretly for the first time in Australian elections. Instructions can be heard through headphones as well as being displayed on a screen with high contrast and large print options. Printed instructions will also be available in Braille. The AEC's Judy Birkenhead explained the process on ABC Radio.
It's done privately. There are screens around the voter and the computer screen is turned away from the public, and they can even turn it off if they don't need it. And then the ballot paper comes out with a barcode, so nobody can see the voter's preferences even so. That ballot paper then goes into the envelope and is decoded later secretly by the returning officers so that their identity is not revealed.
The machines are expected to be available at 29 pre-polling locations for the 2007 federal election, with details available at the AEC's website. And that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
NextG, you know that thing?
Are you sure there's no spam filter on that?
Despite the download fees, I think that's a sterling effort.
Ice TV provides an electronic program guide. It's a list of what's on every TV station for the next 7 days.
What are these people that listens to an iPod in a thunderstorm?
No.
Flies a kite.
I was looking on their website the other day trying to find out what they're charging. They have this thing called Zoo where you can see the A to Z of animals.
If you want to see a picture of a giraffe talking to a wildebeest, then go to the Zoo.
Place. Yeah, exactly.
Otherwise, if you want a competitive data network.
The networks have the ability to send 7 days worth of information down there, but they refuse to do it.
I got the blue screen of death on an XP machine last week.
We don't see that very often.
Exactly. You got a view from the studio tonight. I hope it's just as impressive.
I was going to say, now, Ice TV does not let you skip ads. I'm sick of the number of stories I've read online that says it does.
Who gets paid 38 times more than the current Prime Minister of Australia?
You do.
No.
You wish you do.
What's that, Daddy? Oh, dear. Mm. Ask your mother.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Very good evening, everybody. Welcome to Tech Talk Radio, the show that's been cobbled together in the last minute as per normal. It'll be an action-packed, adrenaline-filled show, no doubt, because our co-commentators are here this evening, Dr. Ron and Graham Callaghan. Nice news, Graham, by the way.
Oh, thank you, Andrew.
That was good. Yeah. Anyway, how are you both?
Good. Well, very well. Thanks, Andrew. Good work, Graham. You've done me out of a job.
I don't think that's quite how it works.
I was actually sending files up to Andrew all of about 25 or 6 hours ago, wasn't I? It's like, we're right on the very edge this week.
We're on the cusp. Speaking of being on the cusp, there's a DVD for tonight's show, Graham.
Oh, thank you very much. That's for podcast production.
Exactly.
Yeah, everybody.
Oh, dear. Well, I've had the week from hell this weekend. I've come to the conclusion that in the tech world, where nothing happens, it's good.
Yes.
It was one of those weeks where it was like anything that possibly could go wrong would go wrong and did go wrong. So
now you moved the official Tech Talk Radio production offices.
Oh, yes.
And you've got all your... How are your servers? How's your ADSL? Andrew's just collapsed in a blithering heap on the floor here.
If you're wondering why last week's show wasn't quite up to spec, I'm not saying it was or it wasn't, but I'm just thinking, if you noticed something different about me last week in particular, yes, that was the reason why we'd moved the Tech Talk Radio global headquarters had moved from one side of the town to the other side, and as a result, we were new ADSL, new this, new that, new office, new coffee shop, whole shooting match, getting used to everything, and of course... Yeah, let's just say the telephone company didn't help things when you go to connect the ADSL. We had a couple of lines put into the building, and they were all tagged but one. And what I mean by tagged is there's, you go down to the, where the phone lines come into the building, and there's a little box, and there's a little piece of paper that hangs off a big box that says, here's your phone number here, and you put them into the appropriate phones. Anyway, we were missing one, and I didn't think twice about it, but it was the... problem child of my whole life.
Was it the critical the critical one that had your ADSL service on it?
It was.
Yeah.
Well, no, actually it wasn't. But what had happened was it thought it was. Huh? And I know that doesn't make absolute sense at all, but what had happened was I had an intermittent fault on the ADSL on the server, and like everyone in the office is going, come on guys, we need the internet here, otherwise we'll go home. And to cut a very long story short is that I had intermittent. The internet would drop out and I have to reconnect and wouldn't automatically reconnect, and it was just being problematic. Like, not even through the modem could I connect to it. So at the end of the day, I thought, this is getting too hard after I'd lost one day's worth of hair, and I don't have a lot to lose, as you've probably seen on the photos on the website. But the following day I thought, well, right, I'm going to report this. I'm missing a pair. I'm going to ring up Telstra and say, where's our pair? And they said, we'll send a liney around to tag it for you. You know,
you actually bought a new router, though, didn't you? In an effort to try
don't
and
go there, yes.
No, in an effort to try and resolve the situation, you thought maybe it's my faulty internet router.
I did, but yes, because I rang the ISP up and I said, "Have you got any problems at the moment? Like, I can't connect. You know, I'm right next door to a telephone exchange, and my ADSL's up and down like a you know what." And they said, no, but we can see you connecting. Oh, you've gone again. Oh, you're back. Oh, you're gone. He said, you got a dodgy modem. You can go and get a new one.
And you thought, this is the one that's worked faultlessly for the last 3 years at the previous office.
Exactly.
But anyway,
exactly. And I thought, well, yes, I have moved from one ISP to another ISP. And I thought, okay, listen, for the sake of $80, I'll go and get a new DSL modem and put it on the system. Like, anyway, and I did. And it worked. But... it
for
worked
all of 30 seconds.
No, it actually worked. It hung in there. It stayed connected. But in the meanwhile, the telephone company had to come back to find the pair that had got lost that I couldn't find, because we had a few phone numbers and they were all there bar one. Yeah. Well, I couldn't find it, and I went through the whole system and couldn't find it. And anyway, they came back and they tagged it for me. And at the same time that they tagged it, the internet dropped out.
Oh,
yeah.
Completely.
I was expecting you to say that. They fixed one problem and caused a different one.
They did. Anyway, I'm sitting there. It was about Tuesday afternoon, and I'm sitting there going, okay, why can't I connect to the internet? Now, the trick thing here was the ADSL light on the modem was still up.
Oh.
Yeah, oh. And the only telltale sign was when I'd logged into the modem and it said, oh, you have a 1.5 megabit 256K stream. And I go, no, I don't. I don't have one of those. I've actually got a faster connection than that.
Is this ADSL 2 plus strangeness?
No, this is flat-out ADSL 1. We're only a couple of K from the city. We can't get ADSL 2. Thank you, Telstra.
Dear. So it's uncapped ADSL 1. So you should be able to get to about 8 meg.
Oh, I do. Now I do get 8 meg about now, which is good. Anyway, to cut a long story short, when they jumped their phone leads around, they moved them all around on the box downstairs, and by the time I'd realised that I was connecting into somebody else's DSL service, thank you to them moving it around.
So that's what I
put it back onto our normal service that I was supposed to have, and guess what? Connected beautifully, and I've gone, a conspiracy theory here. I'm going back to the old modem after they made me buy a new modem because the other one would work, and guess what?
It worked perfectly.
Flawlessly.
Yes.
Anyway.
It's a difficult thing because they're complex systems, and there's so many points where things could go wrong, and they're not all coming back to the same company.
Yes.
So there's no point yelling and screaming at the phone company if it's a modem problem. But the only way to find out who's responsible is to go out and spend money and get another modem and all that sort of
stuff.
That's
where people Graham, would be at the brunt of all this, because a lot of people, especially small business, would just put their hands up and
that's one of the things.
I don't know what to do.
That's one of the primary things I do at work is actually sort of work out who's responsible for what in areas where my customers aren't able to figure that out themselves.
Do you want to put your phone number out so that people can ring you when they have the problems. Okay, good. Thought that'd be the answer. And then I had another problem during the course of the week. The Tech Talk Radio mail server was a target of a spammer. And this is quite an interesting spammer. I won't go into the details on air, but for those of you who know anything about mail servers, what happens is that the unscrupulous types out there, like filling up our mailbox, go and try and pick on poor, unsuspecting mail servers, whether it be large or small ISPs or even corporate ISP, corporate mail servers and things like that. And it was my turn this week. At the same time I was moving businesses, the spammers decided, let's go and pick on Android Tech Talk Radio.
They tried to use your mail server to distribute their spam, did they?
They did.
Yeah,
they did.
I hate it when they try that.
Anyway, and the really funny thing was I'm sitting there, and literally it was midnight, but I'm sitting there watching the mail server whilst I sort of like trying to catch up on the rest of the work that I'd missed out on because I was fixing the ADSL problem.
It's midnight. Why is the mail server so busy?
Why is that mail server going like, and I looked over and it was something paypal.com. I've gone, oh no, someone's got in. And like, I keep a fairly locked down server, as you could imagine. But what had happened was there's a control channel on this particular service where you can come in and do like webmail, for example. It's not quite webmail, but it's like webmail. And they'd obviously targeted that as a, there might have been a flaw or someone's discovered how to do it. So I've since turned my control channel off and my spam has gone away.
Mm.
But at the end of the day, I apologize to the 20, well, I don't know how many thousands of people would have copped it, but I think I got it relatively quickly in the piece. So
yeah, well, this is where it's important, and you don't even need to be running a mail server to be a target of things like this. This is what a lot of the spyware that runs on your PCs is all about. It's using your PC to do somebody else's hard work. So this is
they're called zombies.
That's right. So
I've got two under five at the house at the moment.
A PC that's under somebody else's control. This is why it's important to do your Windows updates and do your
exactly.
Do your anti-spyware programs and your antivirus programs and keep everything up to date and clean.
I couldn't yes. In fact, speaking of questions, you might be able to answer this. You may not, because you're probably not the mackiest person that I know. One of the people here at the radio station asked me before, he said, recently on the show you were talking about how Macs are becoming popular and they're being targeted more and more by viruses, Trojans and things like that because of the iPhone and exploits that people are now having a bit of a tackle at that. Is there any antivirus software available for a Mac?
Oh, I'm sure there is. I'm certain there is.
I'm sure there'll be some listeners out here that'll tell us one way or the other.
Yeah, I don't know
whether they'll own up to it or not. I don't know. They're Mac users. We don't get viruses.
The interesting thing about Macs these days is that underneath every Mac is a sort of generic Unix type machine.
Yep.
So Macs have sort of become part of that world. So all the hackers that have experience with Unix like operating systems like BSD and Linux and all of those now understand how the underneath part of a Macintosh works.
Mm.
So it's all those exploits that are being targeted.
Yes. Oh, well, we'll see what happens. Maybe they'll do a version for McAfee's for OS X. Who knows?
It wouldn't surprise me if there's already one, yeah.
Dr. Ron, you've been awfully quiet this week. Your week obviously hasn't been anywhere near as highfalutin as ours has.
No, I'm sitting back and listening in amazement, counting my blessings, thinking I thought I had a busy week, but listening to you guys, no, maybe I got away quietly.
Well, one thing I've learned, don't move if you don't have to.
Yeah.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it. Don't pick a server up and move. It'll never work when it comes out the other end.
I've always thought that in the middle of moves, like whether I'm moving home or moving offices, helping to move an office, right in the middle of it, you think, gee, this really seemed like a good idea at one point in time, but this is the worst idea in the world right about now.
It's a bit like when you do a restart at 9 o'clock in the morning on a mail server or something, and you go, I've just done this patch up. Oh, I want to restart. Okay, good, bang. Oh, that's another thing I must talk to you about too. Microsoft, Patch Tuesday. Oh.
Oh, yes, they all came down to my systems as well.
Did they? Yeah, well, mine got one and it decided, no, this is so critical, I'm going to put a restart in the middle of the day.
I've got 17 pages here of Microsoft security bulletins.
Have you? I've actually got on the rundown
all of that
for later on, so we'll talk about that.
Yeah, I thought you might be asking me about that.
So that just explains the week it's been. We should move on and do a bit of a show. What do you reckon? Otherwise, we'll be wrapping it up, having been fairly self-indulgent this evening.
Let's do it.
Email in this evening from VR4 Smith. That's his email address.
Good.
Says, hi, in your show podcast 31 2007, was that three shows
that
ago?
A couple of shows ago, yeah.
Or three, yep.
One of your speakers, when discussing the operation of GPS, said he thought that the fourth satellite measurement was needed to get height information as well. From my reading of this, GPS frequently asked questions at the Trimble website. I don't think the fourth satellite measurement is used to determine height information. So there you go. He's also given us some interesting readings. It's explained at wstrimble.com/GPS/how GPS-timing1. SHTML, all that sort of stuff. So might put them up on the website. Sounds like a bit of interesting reading if you're interested in how the global positioning system works. And everyone does take an interest these days. It's amazing where it's being used, from mobile telephone base stations. Mark would probably tell us about that. That's how they get their time reference, through to dispatchers, taxis, even abusive little things that sit on your car dashboard, like Adam Turner was using last week when he came here.
300 metres, turn left.
Yes. It reminds me of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Does your TomTom have GPP, Genuine People Personality?
No.
That'd be fun, goodness. Wouldn't it?
Adam Turner's does, and it even reads out the names of the streets. It does a text-to-speech synthesis hack at the name and reads out the street name, which I think is very clever.
It does. Thank you from thank you, VR. His real name is John Melbourne. Funny, he's got a surname similar to our city, John Melbourne. Hello, John. Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au. If you can get past the spam filter now, come on, do your best, everybody. Or on air at techtalkradio.com.au. So that's what John did. Okay. Senator Helen Coonan, she's been at it again today.
Our favourite communications minister.
Yes. One thing which came out was a press release about how to know to make the right calls in emergencies, or know how to make the right calls in emergencies.
Now, did this come out at the right time? Or
No, you're thinking of the next one I'm going to read.
Oh, okay.
This one came out today. I think every police spokesperson, media person would have been hot on the campaign trail today, because apparently 000 is getting far too many calls.
I think every police, fire, ambulance dispatcher and call taker would have gone, oh no, but I'll explain why in a few moments. Just keep reading.
The Minister for Communications, Information Technology and the Arts, Senator Helen Coonan, that is a mouthful, today launched a national awareness campaign designed to promote Australia's emergency number, including when to call 000 and what to do once you have. Hopefully the majority of us, this is what Senator Coonan said, hopefully the majority of us will never have to make a call to 000, but if we do, we need to know how to do it. I've made calls to 000 before. It's pretty easy. You speak to the call taker and you say,
what
do you want? And the next thing you know, you get people roll up in your street or help out or do whatever you need them to do.
Yeah, when you ring 000, the first person that you get to talk to is a telephone operator who works for one of the phone companies.
Except if you ring from your mobile.
Oh, yeah.
If you ring from your mobile, you get an IVR, an interactive voice recording thing, which says
press 0. Yeah.
Hey, did you really want to call us? If you did, press 5, I think
it's press 5.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
So, but if you've managed to get past that, you're not lying in a pool of something somewhere.
The reason why, for the people listening internationally, the reason why the system asks to press 5, the reason why we have that in Australia is because they were getting so many misdialed calls to the emergency number simply
kitties
by people.
Kitties
and handbags. The handbags were the big ones. A tradesman, for example, would have their phone dropped down between the car seat and the centre console of their car, and for whatever reason, at a knock against the numbers 112 or 000, and on a lot of phones these days, even if the phone keypad is locked,
you can still ring 000.
It can still ring 000, and it would just ring, and they'd have hundreds of thousands of calls.
One of the callers I heard talking about this very thing on Talkback Radio today here in our town was basically saying, oh, my mobile phone, I haven't got any credit left in it, and the only number I could ring was the emergency services number.
Yes.
Can you help me?
The reason why all the call takers, I think, unofficially would have gone, oh, no, not another 000 campaign, is that, yes, many years ago they had one of these, and I'm talking 10 or 15 years ago now, and I used to work at one of the emergency services and communications there, and they'd have
You've led a very colourful life.
I have led a colourful life and will continue to do so.
So you've been a call taker, have you?
No.
No?
I have, yeah, but I remember
doing it one Christmas one night.
Sorry. No, I remember I have, but no, not in this particular instance.
Okay,
And they had a television in the control room, and there was an ad campaign in Australia, or at least in Melbourne, and this silly lady tripped over and fell down the stairs.
What, on the deli?
Yeah, and the kid picked up the telephone, dialed 000, and said, Mummy's fallen down the stairs and I don't know what to do.
That'd be good for the promo.
And within... Not if I'm doing them, son. Within the space of the next 5 minutes, they would have 50, 60, 70 calls to the ambulance communication centre with kids saying, Mummy's fallen down the stairs and I don't know what to do. And they would just expect it and embrace themselves for the onslaught.
It's difficult, isn't it? Because you've got to get the message out of what to do and when it is right to ring 000.
But I think
you've got to remind people to ring 000 if you're in Australia and not some other country's emergency
number. What happens if you ring 911 in this country?
Absolutely nothing.
Because you reckon they'd have up on call direct, wouldn't you?
Well, 911 is the start of a numbering plan.
It is, actually. Yeah. You're right. They can't do that.
Yeah.
No. And same with with 112 from a home phone. I don't think it does anything, but from a mobile, I think 112 goes through to...
Righto. So as a percentage of callers to 000, and there were around 12 million calls made to 000 in this country. That's nearly one per head of population in this country.
Is that every year?
That was last year.
No, this is annually. Yes, go on.
Sorry. What percentage of those do you think would be non-genuine emergency situations?
Well, I would have an inside guesstimate. It's saying probably 80, 85, 90%, something like that.
Oh, that's gutsy. According to Senator Coonan, not quite that bad. She says 60%.
No, Senator Coonan's delusional. It's up. No, I'm sorry. Okay. It's up around the 90% or higher.
Okay.
Mm.
Very good. All right. Well, there you go. Triple zero.
Maybe since the introduction of the IVR, it's dropped right down.
Maybe.
Could be.
Could be that.
We'll make some inquiries.
Before we accuse Senator Coonan of having...
speaking of Senator Coonan, ladies and gentlemen... You remember that thing that no porn stuff that the John Howard released talked about last week?
NetAlert was NetAlert. The initiative.
I received an email from the Senator Honourable Helen Coonan on Sunday, which was entitled Strictly Embargoed Until 3 a.m. Monday.
Yeah, this is the one I was talking about before. This is the one that got pre-released to us.
Yes, the Minister for Communications, Information Technology, that's her again, announced that from today, i.e. Sunday, Australian families will be able to download free filtering for their home computers and get practical advice about internet safety from a dedicated hotline and web address. Recently, together with the Prime Minister, she announced the details of a $189 million NetAlert Protecting Australian Families Online program. Today, with the launch of the hotline, web addresses and filters, the program is going live. We should check it out. Maybe that could be the website of the week. Maybe, after we've checked it out, see if it works well. Are you going to download a copy just to check it out? Dr. Ron, says he, pointing?
I will for a technical exercise. It's not something that I'll be using in anger, but maybe to have a bit of an experiment, yeah.
You can order a CD-ROM if you can't download. Just get one of the kids to show you how to download if you're that way inclined. But then again, the kids will know their way around all this sort of software and technology anyway, wouldn't they?
It's good that they're making the CD available to people, so if you... register to express your interest, you'll get one in the mail. That's good.
Exactly. On with the show. The compact disc turned 25. Happy birthday to it last Friday, of all things.
August the 17th, 1982.
Graham Callaghan, what was your first CD you ever bought? You should know. Everyone, I knew mine was Love Over Gold by Dire Straits.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
The Bangles, Different Light.
Okay, Dr. Ron, what was yours? We won't go there.
it was Frente, the album with the Accidentally Kelly Street on it.
Okay. There you go.
Marvin the Album.
Marvin the Album. Thank you, Graham.
Oh.
How do you know about Frente?
Let's move on.
Okay, let's... Yes. So what's been the highlight of Compact Disc for you guys? Was it... Like, I remember when it first came out, holding one in my hand for the first time, I sort of went, wow, this is amazing that you can get so much material in such good quality on one small, convenient disc, really.
Yeah.
It certainly revolutionised, I think, the way we all listen to music. But there was these...
And it was amazingly rapid how quickly that LPs, you know, vinyl, went out of use and stopped being used and got completely replaced by CDs.
You reckon?
It was... Well, I thought so.
You can still get them today.
You can still get them.
I know they don't press them anymore, but yes. How long do you reckon after that they would have lasted, the old album? 10 years? Were they making them after CD or not even that?
Well, it's a bit hard to put an exact end date on it, yeah, but it was only a matter of a few years, wasn't it? It would have been within that sort of 10 years of...
Yeah.
From release to, yeah.
So what about the other end of the spectrum? With the advent of kiddies, who are very into disposable music, whack it on your memory stick and put it in your computer and your iPod and...
Yep, and now the CD's going out.
What's
going
to happen? What do you reckon? CD's going to be here for a bit?
Yeah, it's the era of low-quality, watery-sounding...
Yeah, but they've got to store it somewhere. Yeah, we've talked about this. Dr. Ron's expressed his opinions here too.
Yes, don't get me started.
But what do you think? The CD's evolved into Blu-ray, really? Through DVD, of course.
Yep.
What do you think? Are you going to be able to store your 50 gigabytes of MP3s on your Blu-ray very shortly and put it in your car like you can your CD?
We haven't seen that yet. I mean, there's a lot of talk and a lot of excitement about the high-definition formats, but they're yet to come to a price point where everybody has them in their car or even, you know, in their lounge rooms.
Yeah, with high-definition video formats, the Blu-ray versus HD DVD issue, although Blu-ray seems to be starting to get a nose ahead. I don't know if that's the feeling everyone else gets.
No, I've had that feeling that the Blu-ray is going to be ahead. Maybe we'll see Blu-ray being used for video And HD DVD is a format that we'll start seeing in PCs for data storage, potentially. We could go
possibly,
that way.
It's interesting. This is in the news just the other day. Blu-ray movie discs outsold films on the rival HD DVD format by 2-1 in the United States in the first half of 2007. So Blu-ray is off and running?
Yeah. So I think that whole issue of A versus B, two different choices, is what's holding that back at the moment. When once there is a winner or there's a third format comes through and sweeps them both out of the way, then I think that high definition, high capacity storage will move forward very quickly.
Sales of Blu-ray discs using the Sony-backed technology totaled 1.6 million units from January 1 through to July 1 in the US, compared with 795,000 HD DVD discs sold during the same period. So
that's just discs, is it? That's not players.
That's discs.
Yeah, that's not many at all.
I don't know anyone with an HD or Blu-ray player at this point in time, except for those who have game consoles that now have them in there and all that sort of stuff.
We've got a long way to go before we see that reaching critical mass, don't we?
But the computer side of it as well is screaming out for higher capacity storage.
Absolutely it is.
A DVD feels small these days, 4.7 gigs, so...
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I can archive a whole Tech Talk radio on one DVD, but you put a few more in, then you can get a few more on.
So but try doing that onto a compact disc. You've got no hope, have you?
No way. No way. Okay.
Formats, move on.
Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au. You can send in your, if you're listening to us, wherever you might happen to be, anywhere in the world. We love hearing from you. John from Adelaide has sent one in to us right this very moment. Tonight's Shoutcast stream using Winamp is the best I've heard. Oh, well done, Dr. Ron. That's
very good.
That's
John.
A bouquet for Dr. Ron.
Contrary to what GD said about 10 minutes before the show started, where's Shoutcast? I was late running out the door, GD. This is what happens.
Yes, consistent audio quality, no dropouts, levels and all that thing. Thank you very much for that report there, John. He's in Adelaide. So
excellent. Hello to all our Highlands FM listeners as well. It's very exciting.
And all of our Western Australian listeners and all of our Queensland listeners through our regional radio stations that take us. It's absolutely wonderful having everybody on board. Let's talk a little bit while we're talking about music. A court ruling rejects all of MP3.com's case. A Moscow court has thrown out a case against the former head of music download site, all of MP3.com, and rejected the damages claim made by three major record companies. Now, is this a bit of a slap in the face for MP3 downloaders? Because apparently all of MP3.com, which was closed in late June but reopened later under a similar name, has been cast as the epitome of Russia's shoddy copyright enforcement and repeatedly held up by US trade organisations as imperilling Moscow's bid to join the World Trade Organization. That's according to Australian IT. That's a pretty scathing report, really.
Yeah.
But yet that gets thrown out of court. But then again, I don't know. But hello, Eugene, if you're listening to us.
Yeah, the Russian legal system obviously hasn't caught up with the need to protect copyrights online, or the perceived need to.
I haven't been to all of MP3.com.
There's not many jurisdictions left in the world where you could run a site like that still.
No.
I thought peer-to-peer sort of took over all those sort of things if you're looking for music that you don't want to pay for.
The BitTorrent-type networks, clients, things like that.
Yep.
Oh, well, there you go. That's, I guess, a bit of a sign of the times, really, isn't it?
So it sounds like that site was just a pure download site. Log on, do a search, and download your MP3. And it was all hosted by them.
Yeah, and put Russian advertising on it or something like that.
That's the Russian version of Napster.
Oh, yeah, now what happened to them? They went legal, apparently, didn't they?
Yeah.
Graham's never used them since, if I recall the promo.
And the developers of Napster that went on to do Skype and those sorts of things? Like the Napster guys? I'm trying to remember now.
No.
Yeah, the Skype people did do something before it, but I can't remember which one
it was. And never Juiced. Mind. They went on to do Juiced as well.
Yeah.
You're right, actually. Skype did. Kazaa, was it?
Yep, oh, Kazaa. That's it. Yeah,
Kazaa. There you go. Sorry. Just had to sit and think about it for a bit.
Mm. All right. Skype have been having trouble too.
Yeah, we'll talk
they?
About that in. Well, let's talk about it right let's now, actually.
Now.
There, you mentioned it, Graham.
Sorry.
So you've mentioned it. Skype had a bit of an outage. Do tell. What happened?
Well, they had an issue where none of their clients could log into their network.
Is that a problem?
Well, it was for the people that wanted to make free, online phone calls.
Free telephone calls,
Dr. Ron, you and I have quite often said to each other under the auspices of a business conversation, this job would be great if it weren't for the clients. So what, Skype didn't have a problem that day?
Well, I don't know what they did. They said it was some sort of a software problem. They didn't, although... At the last time I read their notices, they hadn't explained exactly what it was, although they'd promised to put something up on Monday, which may or may not be up by now.
It says, this is a quote from Skype, our engineering team has determined that it's a software issue, according to site maintained by Skype. Judging from the timing of the comments to that posting, some users have been without a service for as long as 14 hours. Well, I think the moral of the story is
It ran for a lot longer than that by the time it was finished,
I guess the moral of the story is don't rely on VoIP because you're only as good as your internet connection or your ISP, I guess, who's running your... voice over IP relaying and things for you.
A statement on the Skype homepage said, this problem occurred because of a deficiency in an algorithm within Skype networking software.
Oh, if you can't stun them with science.
A deficiency in an algorithm. Well, that could mean almost anything, couldn't it?
This controls the interaction between the user's own Skype client and the rest of the Skype network. Yeah. It's strange that it's something that would just start happening to everybody.
Oh, come on, someone tripped over the extension lead, surely.
Yeah. According to a New York Times report, Skype engineers said the flaw existed in every copy of the client's software.
Really? So people had dodgy clients on their machines trying to make phone calls. But why would it fall over all of a sudden just like that?
Well, this is it. It's got to be some server-based problem.
They could have changed something on the server which changed what the clients needed to do. Or it could have been a time-based thing. The algorithm they're talking about might have used the time of day in some form in the calculation.
That's a good point,
and
right?
It might have, or the day of year. Or something like that to work. You just don't know. They haven't given us quite enough information to tell. But there's all sorts of possibilities.
Yes, conspiracy theories. I love those in technology. It's good because you can't prove it one way or the other.
I think this is more along the lines of just us. Oops, somebody made a big blunder.
Yeah, you thought you had a bad week last week.
Imagine disconnecting millions of your customers. Yes. This is not good.
No. Oh well, there's certain telcos around that don't really care about their customers, are there? They just care about the bottom line. So join the Skype ranks. Hey, another thing which was in the paper today, which Adam's probably been all over, is TiVo will fail, says the pay TV execs.
Now, what a shock, yeah.
Oh, not the Channel 7 execs, I'd be tipping.
No, the pay TV execs, the Foxtel.
Yes, the people it's actually going to compete with.
Yeah, exactly.
You did say pay TV, yes. I'll listen to what you're saying now, yep.
Yeah, according to Australian IT, I think this came from, pay TV sales company Multichannel Network has cast doubt on the future of digital video recorder platform TiVo, which is backed by the Seven Network, telling advertisers that the venture may never get off the ground. Rob Leach, head of MCN's Interactive Television Division and formerly a British pay TV company BSkyB, said TiVo had bombed in Britain after proving to be a difficult product to market, partly due to high set-top box costs. Well, I was under the understanding that this device will be fairly highly subsidised, put on a plan where you pay back a small amount of money each time to the provider, which I think is going to be Engine.
It is.
Engines. Over the course of time. So I'm not sure how that would potentially work or why that would be a bit of a bomb if they're just basing their accusations on the fact that it's a high rollout and high cost rollout. I don't know whether that's going to be effective or not. So,
or perhaps they're just thinking that their business model is a better one.
Yeah, it's just spin doctoring.
They may have a little bit of tunnel vision about their own...
I think the consumers are getting a little bit more savvy when it comes to this sort of stuff, though, don't you think?
They very much are.
Especially, we look at our politicians at the moment, we're spinning it up as best we can because of the federal election coming up very shortly, but, add a bit of a mix of telcos, add a bit of a mix of broadband, add a bit of a mix of TiVo, set-top boxes and all that. Either people go and bury their head in the sand somewhere or they actually just sort of read it for what it is and hopefully get out there and make an educated decision. Maybe they'll listen to us. That'd be good.
Your television, Graham. You're going to get a TiVo?
I do. Probably not. No, I'm...
Good question. Why not?
Probably because I'll get everything I need from a more generic sort of
You're going to download PVR. It, you're going to go to ADSL2 and get it straight off a server somewhere.
Well, that's what Australians do, thanks to
the commercial television stations
there's
in this
a lot
country.
Of that does go on, of course, but there's still things on TV you want to watch, but a normal cheap DVR like those Digitech ones you were talking about the other day, Dr. Ron, is probably going to suit what I need.
It's horses for courses, isn't that? Everyone's got their own personal preference.
That's right.
And in my instance, I'm not going to be getting one of those PVRs. I won't be getting a TiVo. I'm going to stick with the media centre concept.
Yeah, you've got a PC connected up to your television, a whole computer.
That's right. That's right.
I've got a question for you. You've been speaking about TiVos, media centres and all that sort of stuff. How many remote controls do you have sitting on the coffee table in the living room?
I've got one.
Graham's closed his eyes and he's using his fingers.
Oh, no, he's on his second hand.
Second hand now.
Oh, the thumb's gone up, so it's six.
Yeah, quite a few remote controls lying around the place.
I've got one, but I need...
Do I count the air conditioner? Does that?
Yes,
count?
You should.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Oh, that's a vitally important piece of equipment.
I have got a remote control that I can use with the PC, but I don't, and that stays in a drawer somewhere.
Why is that?
Because it's of limited use, I guess.
It doesn't work.
No, it works. It lets you go up and down channel and everything else on your TV tuner card in the PC, but it's not something that I use, to be honest.
Do you play Volume Wars in your house?
No, we've only got the one remote.
Have you? And get two. That's a lot of fun.
No, I've seen that happen. It's ridiculous. And the one remote does our television and our DVD player.
Yeah.
But I have to get up out of the couch to change volume and stereo. I need to get a remote for the stereo.
Adam Turner has the solution for you.
Excellent.
In this week's View from a Couch, if you've ever had universal remote control issues about whatever it is that you want to use and control, here's Adam's solution.
Adam Turner's View from the Couch on Tech Talk Radio.
For those of us seeking nirvana in our lounge rooms, the universal remote control has to be one of the greatest inventions ever. I got sick of buying cheap and nasty ones with buttons that would break after 6 months. So 2 years ago I splashed out on a fantastic Sunwave SCR300 backlit touchscreen remote control. The Sunwave doesn't actually have any buttons, just a touchscreen display with a grid of 28 virtual buttons. The remote changes the layout of the buttons on the touchscreen depending on what you're controlling. One of the best things is that it's a learning remote control, which means I can point it at my old remote controls and the Sunwave remote control can learn their codes. Most remote controls just come with a list of codes that you can punch in to tell it what you want to control, but I often find these don't work. I think a learning remote is essential, otherwise what happens if you're unlucky enough to have a device that's not on their list? I got sick of this happening with the cheap remotes that I buy. Even though all my appliances are well-known brand names, some are old and there's always one that didn't want to play nicely. Now, the other cool thing about the Sunwave remote is that you can program macros into it, which means with one button press you can get it to execute a string of commands, such as turn on the TV, then turn it to the AV channel, then turn on the DVD player, then turn on the surround sound. Now, the Sunwave SCR300 was about $200 at the time. It's the entry-level Sunwave remote, but I got mine for $100 at Dick Smith. It's called the DSE-8-in-1 LCD Touchscreen Learning Remote Control, but it's really just the rebadged Sunwave SCR300. Now, at the time, even $100 seemed like a lot to spend on a remote, but I've fallen in love with that Sunwave. Still, now that I've started using a Vista Media Center computer as my primary entertainment device, the SCR300's limitations are becoming apparent. It's fine if you want to use it to control standard equipment such as TVs, VCRs, DVD players, amplifiers, but it's not flexible enough to work with advanced devices such as PVRs and media centers. The reason why is the remote control for most TVs and VCRs are pretty standard. Play, stop, channel up and down, all those buttons, but there's no standardization when it comes to the advanced features on a PVR. And their remote controls have more buttons than the dashboard on the spaceship. I've decided to try out a few remotes from Logitech's highly respected Harmony range, which are designed specifically with more advanced devices in mind. Logitech has a database of codes for more than 4,500 brands and 150,000 devices, plus the Harmony remotes are also learning remotes. Now, the Harmony 525 sells for $189, but I suspect the Harmony 785 for $399 might better suit my needs. Now, that sounds like a crazy amount of money to spend on a universal remote control, but if it means I can be at one with all my home entertainment gear, then I reckon it's worth it. Now, your average mums and dads, like mine for example, aren't going to spend this much on a remote control. The problem is that more and more people like my parents are going to find that the cheap universal remote controls won't meet their needs. I was going to give my old Sunwave remote control to my dad, but after looking at the remote controls on his new TV and hard drive recorder, I think he'll run into the same problems I have. I'll take the cheaper Harmony 525 over to his house and see if it meets his needs. Maybe we could call it a combined birthday, Father's Day, Christmas present. I've taken him this far into the digital age, I can't abandon him now.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
listening to Tech Talk Radio.
It's amazing how in the studio, whenever Adam comes on, there's deathly silence. Everyone just stops and listens to. Wonderful thing. Have you, now, are you going to go and buy a universal remote control, Dr. Ron?
I've seen some of these fancy schmancy remote controls. $399. What happens when the dog eats it? Or... buries it in the backyard or it falls behind the couch.
Yeah, you wouldn't want your dog to... Oh, buy two. So you're spending $800 on remote controls now.
That's a lot of
money.
Can
I tell you how many remote controls we go through at our place with kids? You wouldn't want to know.
Is it because they get put in the toaster and they get dropped in the Vegemite? And...
No, they just hit the floorboards from a great height off the back of the couch on a regular basis. Well, I'm not saying my wife or I aren't guilty of that at times, but... normally you can sit there and you hear the kids running around and smash and batteries go everywhere and remote controls go everywhere.
And how many have you got in your house? You didn't answer that question that you asked
remote
us.
Controls, about half a dozen.
Really?
Yeah, one for the surround sound, one for the telly, one for the DVD player, one for the VHS machine that's obsolete. I'm going to throw it out any day now.
But, yeah, do that.
There's a few. Very frustrating.
VHS
and the one you want, when you're trying to record something off air, the one that you can't find... is the one for the DVD recorder.
So you can set the program.
Yeah, that's the one.
Mm. Graham, how much would you spend on a remote control? You reckon $399 is a bargain? Adam spent $100 on that somewhere.
I'd go to $100. I don't know whether I'd go to $399. Adam, you'd want to be given one for that, babe.
Yeah.
Father's Day, Christmas, and Boxing Day for the next few years, I would have thought.
If I had the full surround sound, everything matching sort of system, you know, home cinema type deal, then, you know, I might consider... spending a couple hundred bucks on a remote control, but...
it'd have to open and close the curtains for you at the same time.
Yeah, that's right. And bring the screen down out of the ceiling and all that sort of stuff.
Go and get you a bourbon and Coke and fluff
and
up your pillows.
Start the popcorn maker and all that sort of stuff. Yeah.
Getting into dangerous country now, boys.
for my hodgepodge system at home that's cobbled together from parts, I'll stick with my remote controls.
Those expensive ones, they're not like conventional remote controls. They're like touch screen. They're almost like little... computers, aren't they?
Oh, I've seen them. They're really good for what they do, but I don't think they're for everybody.
Very good. QWERTY beats iPhone.
QWERTY, that's a keyboard, isn't it?
Speaking of touchpad
things. Speaking of touchpad things. Yes, QWERTY is the name that we give informally to that type of keyboard.
Well, if you look at your keyboard on your laptop, the top left-hand corner spells QWERTY.
It does, QWERTY, as opposed to an ABC keyboard or a numeric keypad.
Why did they stop at U?
What's after Y? U, is it?
U.
QWERTY U. I don't know. Maybe QWERTY. What's this? QWERT.
Exactly.
Chicago-based usability consultancy, UserCentric, says text entry on the iPhone's touch keypad takes twice as long as on a phone with a QWERTY keypad and is barely faster than using a standard alphanumeric cell phone keypad. UserCentric tested the iPhone's texting features with frequent texters to see how rapidly they could adapt to the iPhone's touch keyboard.
Yes.
So they had participants send a number of messages.
Now, these are people who are used to the other method, though.
They're used to texting, that's right, and they didn't own iPhones themselves, and they found that it took a lot longer using the iPhone to send text messages.
Well, I don't have an iPhone, so I don't have that problem.
No, if you're listening and you are an iPhone user...
won't be anyone in this country.
Well, if you're listening overseas, if you're listening in the United States, we want to hear from you. Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au. Let us know what you think of the texting and the general usability of the keyboard on the new iPhones.
Okay. Wikipedia.
Yes.
You used it?
I use it a lot.
I think we've got a mention in Wikipedia. I think you search for Dr. Ron, Tech Talk Radio comes up.
That's a scary thought.
It is, isn't it? A new online tool called the Wiki Scanner reveals just who's been making changes to the pages of online encyclopedia Wikipedia. How about that?
Well, it does and it doesn't.
It does and it doesn't?
A change tracker, is it?
I thought this was... when this came out, I thought, oh, here we go, this will be fun. And I think
I thought something very similar.
In a lot of respects, I think it's a bit tongue-in-cheek, but the purpose of, I think, what they're trying to do is sort of make people stop and think.
Do tell.
When they go and enter.
What are they trying to do with this?
Well, basically what Wiki Scanner does, it reveals the IP address and does a bit of a who-is lookup on the IP address to reveal who's been trying to...
Oh.
So you can see if it's been edited from a computer that's, say, on the CIA's network.
Oh.
Or on the Vatican's network.
Oh.
But what it doesn't reveal, very importantly, is whether it's a... if it's come from, say, let's say the CIA's network, whether it's a CIA agent doing his job and entering something into Wikipedia that might be advantageous to the CIA, or it might just be some factual information that the CIA wants to get out, or whether it's some CIA employee on their lunch break who's entering it for their own entertainment.
He's wilfing while he's eating his sandwich.
Exactly.
I should have worn my CIA t-shirt today. There's nothing like a good conspiracy theory.
Yeah, but that's what this doesn't reveal, is whether it's a...
The intent behind the modification,
right,
obviously.
Yeah.
But I would have thought it's just good for spin in a lot of respects, because, you know, someone writes something about something on the internet and you want to change it, you want to edit it, Wiki will let you do that.
Yes.
Classic example. There's actually even a web page which you can go to, which we'll mention in what you're about to hear, where you can actually go and see what Wiki's revealed and who's been changing whose pages. The top one at the moment, would you believe, is a Microsoft and Apple scenario that's unfolding as we speak. But anyway, yes, have a bit of, sorry, Dr.
Oh, is this software or is it a website or is it all about to be revealed?
Have a listen and see what you think.
We've all heard of Wikipedia. So if you've just crawled out from under a rock, Wikipedia is a web-based free content encyclopedia written collaboratively by volunteers and sponsored by the non-profit Wikipedia Foundation. The site is a wiki. Anyone can edit it and anyone can add to an article. Wiki is derived from the word wiki-wiki, meaning rapidly in the Hawaiian language. The world, according to the online encyclopedia, is in a constant state of update, as tens of thousands of contributors work to ensure the site's content is current. But now an innovation on the site has confirmed a long-held suspicion that Wikipedia is a prime target for spin doctoring. A new identification program on the site reveals that some of the most prolific contributors to Wikipedia are the CIA, the British Labour Party, and the Vatican. And they're not just updating their own entries. In the pre-internet age, people turned to books when they wanted information. Now, in the age of connectivity, people go online for news and information, but sites like Wikipedia have replaced the traditional encyclopedia. The difference here is that the content doesn't come from experts or editors. It comes from anyone. Seamus Byrne is the editor of online technological site Gizmodo Australia. But while anyone can put up content, users do keep track of entries to ensure that they're accurate and balanced.
Wikipedia is basically an open encyclopedia online that absolutely anyone can edit, anyone can add entries to, and anyone can change anything they read on there. Quite a large community of users that are really devoted to Wikipedia, and it's something they do spend a lot of time monitoring is when changes are made, you know. I guess so far it hasn't been a case of monitoring the source, but they do try to keep an eye on any bias that may appear within any article.
But now a new innovation has revealed some interesting sources of that bias. The so-called Wiki Scanner searches through entries and edits posted on Wikipedia to find where they originate. Among the usual list of companies and celebrities spinning their online images are some unusual mentions, including of all organisations, the British Labour Party, the Church of Scientology and the CIA.
You've always got the feeling that they've been doing it, and it just confirms that idea, because there's a lot of both, I guess, vanity editing as well as more serious editing that does go on.
Wikipedia shows the CIA has edited entries on many US government-related issues, including presidential biographies and descriptions of military operations. It's also edited topics as diverse as Adam Smith's The Wealth of Nations and the singer Richard Marx. So is this cause for concern? There's no doubt that we all like a good conspiracy theory, and this is sure to add fuel to the fire when it comes to what we read online. In a world of cynics and spin doctors, Wikipedia have certainly opened Pandora's box with their new wiki scanner. Seamus Byrne from Gizmodo says proof the CIA is editing on Wikipedia will fuel internet conspiracies. He says Wikipedia is just one place the government is watching you.
Surveillance is the big thing. I mean, obviously there's the quite large, and I guess people in online circles certainly know about it, called the Echelon Project, and it's, you know, a series of surveillance systems around the world that actually monitor phone data, all kinds of traffic that goes on, looking for keywords related to things like terrorism and all kinds of troublesome issues, and they pull that out and try to sift through it to find you know, any connections that could be made to point to a real problem.
The free scanner grabs the IP addresses used in anonymous Wikipedia edits in the past 5 years. By combining that with public information about the IP addresses belonging to whom, the scanner reveals Wikipedia changes made from computers assigned to a bevy of organisations. Many of the edits are predictably self-interested. For example, PCs in the Church of Scientology were used to remove criticism in the church's Wikipedia entry. But others hint at board office workers, such as the tweaks to Wikipedia's articles on TV shows being made from CIA computers. Examples are being tallied online at wired.rededit.com/wickedgame. One example they give is a story by Apple boss Steve Jobs titled Microsoft Whitewashes Controversy, Cost of Ownership, Linux Comparison, where a Microsoft employee tried several times to rewrite the article in the company's favour. Unfortunately for Microsoft, this sneaky revisionism was immediately recognised by a cautious Wikipedian who traced the IP to Microsoft.com and reverted. So the next time you feel the urge to edit a wiki article, just keep in mind, they know who you are.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
The one thing I omitted from that is that never believe what you read on the internet. Sorry, excuse me.
The last point you made in that story was a very good one, that, yeah, for everyone out there that's making biased or self-interested edits, there's 10 or 100 good guys who are out there watching what's going on and trying to keep everybody honest. So cuts both ways. Go on.
I've tried to edit wiki articles through proxy servers before, but wiki bans...
Why?
I'm just telling you, I've done technical experiments... And Wiki prohibits the use of you masking your real IP address. So all the proxy servers I've tried to use, they throw up an error and say, sorry, we're not accepting edits from your IP address.
Yes.
So they do make an effort to
so
try...
So that the vandals can't use correct. That to
well, if you think about what Wiki's trying to be, there's a lot of people out there that would see it not be that because if they can get in there and put false, misleading... information, because if you remember the old encyclopedias, they were all researched and verified, and this is a true fact. Whereas Wiki, hey,
well,
we're on there for goodness sakes.
Volunteer editors still research and verify the facts and go back to original sources. The editors on Wikipedia will make quite a fuss if you start putting statements on Wikipedia articles that don't have sources, don't have verifiable sources.
Well, we must have been verified then.
So.
Because I think, Dr. Ron, you put that up there, didn't you?
I've had a fair hack at it, yeah.
Yeah. I must admit, I tried changing a Wikipedia article the other day. Someone put something up there about a customer of mine that wasn't exactly right, and Google had found it, and we thought we would try and revert that and just sort of put an edit up there and all that. And it accepted it, and we deleted a bit of their content, and it hasn't affected. It's fixed the search engine problem that we had. So, yeah, it just goes to show that you can get in there and change those sort of things.
Absolutely.
The downside is that there's cheap and nasty things out there like answers.com that cache Wikipedia things, and it takes forever to get rid of them out of those sort of things.
That's part of, open source is that, yeah, once it's there, anyone can use it because it's free. But
No, off you go.
The other thing to note is that even though it's open for anybody and everybody to edit Wikipedia, what you do find is that there are a lot of people out there with a very intimate, low-level technical knowledge of some subjects, and they take great delights and go to great pains to keep articles updated and very concise and very accurate. So, and you wouldn't necessarily have that input in a traditional encyclopedia.
That's true, because, yes, you have the specialist's entries. But the other thing is, with Wikipedia, it's a great source of facts, but if you're using those that information for anything that needs to be spot-on accurate...
You need to go and do your homework, don't you?
Use Wikipedia, but verify it by using other sources as well.
That's right.
There's a well-known journalist in this country Tim Lane, I think, without wanting to cast aspersions, I apologise, Tim, if it wasn't you, but I think it was, who actually quoted on radio sources from the internet and didn't check his sources thoroughly.
Mm.
And as a result, he paid the ultimate price in credibility.
I don't think there's only one that's been caught out. Oh, I think it happens quite a bit, but yeah, check your sources always.
I'm sure. All right, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Dr. Ron Graham Callaghan and myself, Andrew McComb. You can contact us by feedback@techtalkradio.com.au via the website form that's there, or pick up the phone and ring 1-300-664-882 and record us something and we'll play it to air. We'll be back with more in just a moment.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Andrew McComb.
I think what people have on their homepage tells you a lot about what a person's like.
Dr. Ron.
In the past, we've talked about ways in which we can...
string them along.
Manage, I think is the corporate expression. Mark.
Graham Callaghan.
Don't open things that you're not expecting, even if they do appear to come from somebody you know.
Mark Diggins.
I heard a rumour today.
Ooh,
I
hear this.
I like your rumours.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
It's $5 a month for 10 megabytes.
Oh, ouch.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Thank you to our listeners sending in. One listener in particular, hello Dallas. He said Terry Lane's, it was Terry Lane. That's good. He sent through a URL, have a read online and all that sort of stuff. Yes, he fell from grace. There you go. There you go.
Thanks, Dallas.
Now, we're going to talk a little bit about Star Office. Have you guys heard of this from Google?
Yeah.
Or Google's... Yeah, what have you heard?
Well, they're bundling now Star Office in the Google Pack.
Yeah.
That you download from Google. It's got all sorts of useful free type software in it.
Yep.
And you can install Star Office from that on your computer.
Is this the Star Office that used to be around like 15 or 20 years ago?
Yeah, probably.
Like
yeah.
There was WordStar and those applications.
Yeah, really remember those.
Early, very, very early word processing and
you used apps. To run that on your TRS-80, didn't you?
Yeah, probably. Probably.
Not sure whether it's exactly the same product there, but yeah, it's been around for a long while. It got passed around from hand to hand. And it landed at Sun Microsystems, the same people that are responsible for Java.
Yes.
And what Sun did was something very interesting. They said, all right, let's give everybody access to the source code. They opened it up, and OpenOffice.org was born.
Well, Google's right. Very pro-open source. So, everything they do is open source.
So StarOffice became OpenOffice.org. And now they still produce a commercial version of StarOffice, which is based on... So OpenOffice.org was based on StarOffice, but newer versions of StarOffice are based on OpenOffice.org.
Oh.
So there's a lot of backwards and forwards with code and improvements and, yeah, both projects contributing to both projects.
Now, if this is a plan that Google has, are they going to make it available online, like so you can use an Office application?
No, they're allowing it to be downloaded with their Google Pack, which is a download that contains all kinds of useful software for your PC, like, you know, an anti-spyware program and your Google toolbars, which I hate, but some people like.
Okay, so it's a downloadable installation package. It's not an online...
No.
Okay. But it's you still got to buy it in a lot of respects. It says here, StarOffice is Sun's commercial version of the freely distributed Open Office suite, which also was developed by Sun and has been downloaded about... just a couple of 100 million times, yep. Really?
If I remember correctly, the commercial version of StarOffice is something like $70 US.
Yeah, exactly, $84 Australian, but that could be 90 tomorrow, the way the Aussie dollar is going. StarOffice typically costs about $84 Australian to download, but is being distributed by Google for free. Oh, there you go, getting now, and you might get it for free for Google. It has more features than OpenOffice and typically includes technical support from Sun through the free Google, although the free Google version won't, because there's, you know, you don't get everything from nothing, do you?
There's licensing issues, yeah. There's a few features that are proprietary that are owned by Sun or owned by other people that are in the StarOffice version that aren't in the open source version.
Mm. So I wonder how that's going to go with Microsoft. Obviously, Google having go at Microsoft there.
Well, I think that's it. I think that Google feel, even though they've already got another competing product, which is their online document and spreadsheet editing that you alluded to,
that's
what
I was thinking of, yeah.
Yeah, they still got that. And I think Google are just thinking that more competition in the Office suite market and more alternatives out there, getting people to use anything but Microsoft is going to be a bonus for everybody. Yeah, what's your rumor?
You know how Google does things pretty well?
Yeah.
You know how there's web browsers? And there's web browsers, like the traditional. There's Internet Explorer. There's Safari for the Mac. There's
the Mozilla Project.
Yep.
Firefox.
Browsers, Firefox.
And you heard it here first. I could be wrong. But I reckon there's a Google browser very shortly.
Oh, that's a good rumor. Who have you been speaking to? A Google browser.
I reckon.
Interesting.
I reckon.
Yeah.
You heard it here
based
first
on one of the
radio?
Open source ones that are already out there?
Yes. It's only logical that Google will go this way.
It kind of is, yeah. So you reckon a Mozilla fork?
Another open source browser coming your way, thanks to the people who want to take over the world for free.
Google browser.
Google, yes, the most successful advertising company in the world.
Six months, I reckon.
6 months?
Maybe. Who knows? Who knows? Could be wrong.
You've got your finger on the pulse.
My finger on something.
Okay. Well,
it's the switch over here that turns me off. Hey,
it's on tape now. We'll keep that.
Tape.
And we'll,
tape.
Well, something like tape.
Videogram.
Zeros.
Yeah. We'll play that back when it when it happens.
Okay. Australia joins Xbox 360 price cut because once again they can't give them away. Microsoft is set to drop the price on its Xbox 360 games console in Australia in an effort to give the machine a better shot at the Christmas market.
Yep.
Have we reached saturation in computer games in this market? Have we not sold two computer games for every single child in this universe? Dr. Ron even owns one, for goodness sakes.
Yes, that was a bit of a shock, wasn't it?
Wasn't it?
I don't own one.
Well, apparently Microsoft, the fully featured Xbox 360 Pro, will drop from, and I don't know my pros from my not pros, will drop from $649 to $579, so, you know, there's a little bit down, while the stripped-down core system drops from $499 to $399, putting it on par with the Wii.
Yeah, they're trying to
By coincidence, they dropped it to the same price as the Wii.
Yeah, they're trying to make it competitive with Nintendo's product. Yeah. But
so what's it going to do to the PlayStation? Because that's still a grand. PlayStation 3 blow you out of the water for a grand.
Yeah, about $1,000 in Australia. But
it's got a lot of features that the others don't, though, doesn't it?
It's got a lot of features, and it's also got an integrated...
Are we talking game features, or are we talking things like DVD, Blu-ray tuners and stuff like that we spoke of last week?
Talking about your Blu-ray player, talking about your HDMI connection, you're talking about all that stuff that isn't in the core.
So when you're buying a video game now, these days, if you pay extra, you're getting other things. You're getting DVDs. Because I'm not in this market. My kids don't go there yet.
Well, it's still the cheapest high-definition video player available on the market. It's in addition to being a fantastic games console, you're getting your Blu-ray.
Yeah, but that's it. It's many things to all people, isn't it? So as a dad who wants to go and probably buy his kid a video game, is the pro version of the Xbox going to be the same as the non-pro version for playing games?
I don't know what the difference is.
I think the primary difference for playing games is whether or not it's got a hard disk in it, which I know the core version doesn't have. I'm not sure whether the pro version has, but the new elite version that's come out has got a 120 gig hard disk. And Microsoft have said they're going to start allowing the game developers to develop games that require the hard disk, which is going to be a bit of a blow for the core version that hasn't got one.
Well, that's just going to add value to the core version, or the one where you've got to have to buy a hard... Can you upgrade them?
Yes, you can get an external or an add-on hard disk of some kind. I'm not sure whether it's external or whether it's a plug-in or something, but you can get an add-on hard disk for it, yeah.
Having said that the PS3 had the integrated Blu-ray player...
Yes.
The Xbox has an HD DVD player, but it's an add-on. It's not integrated.
That's right.
You have to buy it separately. It's another couple of $100, I think.
I'm very confused. We should get someone in to talk about this for Christmas because there'll be a lot of people out there shopping for these sort of things, I would imagine.
Yeah, certainly will.
For the Christmas stocking? Because what are we at? We're about 4 months away from Chrissy now, aren't we?
Oh, don't go there.
New Year's. Hey, Rock, here we come.
Just got over the last
Christmas.
Looking
forward to Christmas holidays. Must get this show sponsored. Hey.
We could ask if we've got any listeners out there that are expert in this field, they might be able to send us through some stuff on the email or log on the forum and just give us some info on what you know about all this.
That'd be good.
Adam last week was talking about Microsoft handheld games consoles, potentially.
There's a mobile phone that's out now, too,
to compete
by Sony Ericsson.
PlayStation Portable.
Compete with
the
PSPs.
And the Nintendo DS,
That's it.
Interesting.
Sorry, I just thought I'd have a sip of coffee while you guys were talking.
Okay.
There's a little Sony Ericsson thing out that resembles a PlayStation, but it's a mobile phone as well. They've gone so that whilst you're on the train or tram or bus or car or wherever you happen to be, you can actually play a quick game on your Sony...
Yeah.
Yeah.
whatever it is, yeah.
Too many things, you know. Whatever happened to the concept that you make a telephone call on a phone?
Or you sit in the train and read a book.
I think those days are long
telephone
gone.
Telephone calls are boring.
Yeah. Are they? Well, they mean work, don't you? You can earn some money. Hey, speaking of...
Very 20th century. Yes, speaking of...
Graham, what the hell did Microsoft do in Patch Tuesday this last week?
Oh, hang on, I've got a 17-page document here about that.
You've got a tome.
Because let me tell you, my Windows 2003 server decided to restart itself, and it came up with a message and said, we thought it was really important that we restart for this critical patch. Now, what was so important that Microsoft forced a restart on my server?
Didn't you have any say in the matter?
It just did it.
That's obnoxious.
Well, no, I probably did.
You did have a say because you chose to tell it to automatically install updates at 3 a.m., whereas you could have told it to download updates and wait for permission to install them, which is what I do on my servers.
Yes, Your Honour, but in... I didn't mean to.
No, you've done the right thing, really. If in doubt, let it do it automatically, because you're more likely to have problems if you don't install an update than you are if you do. Even though there are occasionally problems with updates, there's more problems with not doing updates, like your zombie situation that you were talking about earlier.
I normally, when it comes to servers, I don't touch them. They work. You just leave them go. But this one decided 10 o'clock in the morning when everyone's checking their mail. Where's the server gone?
It should have done it at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Well, I don't know why I did it at 10. Just did it when I was going into a meeting and I get a customer ring up.
Check your time zones.
Yeah.
So what else happened? Did Vista cop any? I'm sure they did.
Yeah, there were some Vista ones. There were a whole range of them. There were...
But what was so critical? What weren't they telling us?
What have we got? Oh, there was one to XML core services, so anything in Microsoft
what
products
that mean?
Handles. Well,
a core service to XML. My God. Ron, do you know what a core service to XML is?
It'll be to do with the way the machine handles does its XML interpretation.
Yeah, there's lots of things on the computer that use XML, which is basically a document format. It's a way of storing information.
I'm glad you said that.
Extensible markup language. It looks a bit like the way web pages look in the background, like the way you used to design web pages.
Well, this is what OpenOffice, or should I say the Microsoft Office and even OpenOffice
are
going.
Yeah, well, you can store any kind of information in an XML document.
And they're very universal. Anything can read them and anything can write them.
So, obviously, there's lots of different Microsoft products that use XML, so I'm assuming this is the common code that they use in all those programs to read and write XML things. There was an update to that. It had a security flaw in it. There was a problem with, let me have a look, OLE automation, which...
Oh, so these were really just core things. They weren't things that were interfering with our general running of the mill.
Just little security problems with the nuts and bolts, really technical stuff of how the computer works inside, Vulnerability in GDI can allow remote code execution. Vulnerability
in vector
markup
everything to everyone,
language.
Doesn't it?
Yeah, these are...
Well, they just hyped it up and they said, you know, there was a huge big batch coming down last patch Tuesday, which was unusual. I thought
there were six critical ones and three important ones and a number of hangers-on as well. It depends on how you count them, how many of there were six critical ones that a lot of people got, and about 15 or so overall, depending on what products you were using.
Dr. Ron, you're not known for doing updates of this caliber on your Windows machine. I think the last time you did it, you had 132 and it took you 3 days to reboot your machine. What happened to yours this week?
It's still not a genuine...
oh, you're kidding. are a prime target to become a zombie.
No,
somebody's going to send you a carefully crafted email. You're going to open it up and your machine's going to be sending out spam to everybody in the world. Do your updates, Dr. Ron.
I'm bulletproof. What were you asking me, Andrew? Sorry. there was a serious question in there somewhere. Look, I've migrated most of the stuff off that Windows machine. And Andrew actually walked into my office tonight and I said, and he went, oh, Ubuntu logon screen. I went, yep.
I thought that was what it said through the soft furriness of his old 20-inch CRT
I've got to buy a new... Someone needs to buy a new monitor.
You're going to pop it on your nature strip, Graham. Watch out.
Do you do your updates on your Ubuntu machine?
Yes, I do on a daily basis. There's just as many updates come down for the Linux-based PC.
That's important,
systems.
Isn't it? Yeah. The fact that there's lots of updates to the Microsoft programs doesn't mean that there's a particular problem there. It's normal with that much software that there will be lots of security updates and fixes along the way.
That's right.
So the bottom line is, do your updates, really?
Do your updates.
And it keeps you safe, secure, and you can go to bed thinking, hey... done it.
And helps reduce other people's security problems as well. You won't contribute to the spam problem and you won't contribute to the zombie problem.
Well, that's very important, isn't it? Because we've got enough zombies, especially with the election coming up. There'll be all sorts of issues coming up there.
Don't listen to Dr. Ron either. Just do as I say, not as I do.
It's time for a break. We'll be back with more in a moment.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Have you heard something on Tech Talk Radio worth talking about? Are you looking to share your technical dilemmas or opinions with like-minded Tech Talk Radio listeners? Well, now you can. Introducing the Tech Talk Radio web forum. Visit forum.techtalkradio.com.au and join our community. It's free and on a web browser near you. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
And welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. Andrew McComb here, Dr. Ron and Graham Callaghan. Now, boys, camera growth is rising, would you believe? This is for digital cameras and
the
likes.
My camera's the same size it's always been.
Is it? Well, would you be surprised to hear that consumer appetite for digital cameras so far this year has grown twice as fast as expected as buyers replace their older models at cheaper prices, according to some research firms?
Yeah. Well,
because they're getting dirt cheap, hasn't it? After we had Michelle in the other
day. Yeah, you can get good digital cameras now for 7 and 8 megapixels.
Where's yours tonight? You normally have yours on the bench here taking happy snaps?
It's not far away.
Oh, well, there you go. And do you use your camera one in your phone? By anyone?
Any I don't chance? Use the one on the phone, no. It's Dr. Ron, disgraceful.
Do you use it? I do.
I saw your hot air balloon experiment this morning. You're just showing it around. So you do use yours.
A hot air balloon nearly landed on me today in Richmond. It was most distressing. I came very close to the railway
station.
Did you
run?
No, I stood there and pulled my telephone out and took a photo of it. But,
well, that's
maybe
good. That's
in
what
hindsight,
you do.
I should have run away. But, yeah, not to worry.
So there you go. Because they're all getting cheaper, faster and better, people are throwing out their old ones and going... And it's probably the same when you think about it for video cameras too. Like, how cheap are they these days? Talk about disposable. You can get yourself a mini DV camera for $600.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah, the technology is really coming down. And,
I think the other thing that happens is that people have got experience now with these digital cameras, and they've had one, and they've figured out, it's not quite right, it doesn't do this very well, the pictures are just not quite good enough to blow up to the size I want, whatever it is that might be wrong with it, and there's good, better, cheaper ones out now, so that, they will turn them over, and they're smarter buying now than they have been in the past. Because the first time you buy any gadget, no matter what type of gadget it is, the first one you buy is never the one you end up with.
Put your hand up here if you're still playing off your first CD or DVD player.
Yeah, that's right.
Remember when they came out?
That
was thousands of dollars and all that sort of stuff. Yeah. And look what's happening now with Blu-ray. You know, you have to empty a whole week's salary into the retailer's bank account if you want to pick up one of those. So.
But in 5 years' time, we'll be saying...
they'll be dirt cheap.
$50.
Like the $50 DVD players you buy now.
At the supermarket.
Blu-ray in a few years, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Farmers are up in arms over Next-G. This
really?
Is the next-generation mobile technology that we've been talking about recently on the television, on the program, on the radio program. A war of words has broken out between Telstra and the farmers' organisation over the range of handsets. Funnily enough, they haven't had blue ticks on them up until recently that are available for Next-G network. The Next-G is set to replace the Telstra CDMA mobile network, relied on by rural Australians, and the range of the networks has become very sensitive topics. So they're still having a go about handsets. This is in the press today. And also, we're starting to see the mudslinging sort of, they're throwing bigger bits of mud at each other at the moment in relation to whether or not they can turn off the CDMA network in 2008, January.
January.
And they've only got a month. Yeah, I think they've only got a month to go. That's why Mark's not here. They've only got a month to go to prove that the new third generation technology or the next G version for Telstra's point of view cuts the mustard. When it comes to...
So the farmers aren't excited about 3G. So you don't think that they're wanting to have streaming video to their phones while they're driving their tractors, or wanting to read their email while they're plodding up and down the field and feeding the cows, or wanting to make video calls?
I was surprised, actually, when you had your news article, Graham, about the usability of the Next G and video calling for... people
for the
with,
visually impaired.
For visually impaired.
And someone
people.
From Telstra thought that it would be good for sign language.
Yeah, and I thought, no.
Well, it's just so that people can stand there and do the things that visual things in the Next G in the camera.
Sign into the Next G phones.
Video calls,
I thought you'd get one in every three things you were signing. It'd be almost like a voice call. You get one in every three words.
And well, That's what the Telstra guy said, so that's what we reported. We reported what he said, but yeah, you can draw your own conclusions about whether it might be practical or not.
Well, I can understand where the farmers are coming from here. They were not all that long ago forced to move on to the CDMA network.
From the analog network, that's
And now this one's being switched off, and they're being forced to move again. So unless the coverage is at least as good, they're not going to understand them.
But it's handsets.
And
it's whether the handsets
are at least as good, and that's the problem. Very limited range of next-g handsets still. Although new Samsung one out with the BlackBerry lookalike from Samsung come out on next-g now.
Speaking of handsets,
yes,
because we like linking things. Yes, this is an Anna Corrin segue.
Go on.
I was surfing the net, as I do. I was wolfing in my spare time today for all 5 minutes and 30 seconds until the phone rang.
Yeah.
Uber Gizmo, which is one of the gadget blogs, is flogging a new – well, letting us know about these new things called glucophones, where, you know, if I assume it's targeted at a diabetic-type sort of market, where if you need to know your glucose level or your blood – what do they call it?
Yeah, blood sugar levels.
Yep. Yeah. There is now a mobile phone which is a gluco-ready phone. So you actually prick your finger and you put a bit of blood on the thing and you slide it into the side of this gluco phone, yes.
That would be incredibly useful if you're one of those people. And there's a lot of people about that have to do this little finger prick.
Yeah, it's an LG
blood test.
But why would you want it integrated with a telephone?
So that you've always got it with you.
Exactly. There's an LG 5200 handset which has this new blood analysis thing built into it.
That's bizarre.
I think they might be onto something. That's
Graham. But look, I always want my mobile phone and my car keys and with me at the same time. But I don't want a mobile phone car key ring.
Don't you want
device.
The blood bank on your device as well?
Wouldn't you rather just carry, if you've got a mobile phone that can do this test as well, if you're one of these people that has to carry around the glucose test meter as well, this saves you carrying an extra device.
No, I'm a bit sceptical because I think the problem with these sorts of things, when you integrate devices like this, it's always...
Sometimes you end up with a device that does neither job well.
Correct, and it's for novelty factor rather than, usability factor.
It depends on how well it's done, doesn't it? But I reckon there's a market for that.
I reckon
a lot of people around that need to do this.
Absolutely.
It's a bigger, bigger problem.
Pick a carrier which would want to use this handset.
No.
It'd have to be Telstra, wouldn't it? Oh. You know, they want every last drop
every
of blood.
Every last drop.
Listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Tech Talk Radio wants your feedback. Call the Tech Talk Radio feedback line or visit our website and tell us your thoughts on the show. Tell us your likes and dislikes, your technical dilemmas and program suggestions. Call 1-300-664-882 and leave a voice message. That's 1-300-664-882 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, and click on the feedback link.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics.
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
This week's gadget is the Iubu Blue portable media player.
I beg your pardon?
That's the brand name, Iubu. I-U-B-I.
You should have you should be Iron.
Iron.
Yeah.
Iubu Blue. The Iubu Blue has a huge 4.3-inch widescreen TFT LCD. It has an ultra-fast response time, pin-sharp clarity, and an impressive 480 by 272 pixel resolution. The review on MStation, which is the Australian online MP3 player shop, says, "Forget the skeptics' claims that you can't watch movies comfortably on a portable media player. The razor-sharp screen on the Iubu Blue is a visual treat and more than capable of supporting hours of movie magic."
How big's the screen?
It is 4.3 inch.
Ian, just visually doing that in the studio, it's about the big.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It supports virtually every video codec under the sun. It has Bluetooth for wireless headphones, and it contains a 30-gigabyte hard disk. It retails in Australia for $579.
Look, I think that's pretty good value for money for something like that, in a lot of respects. I must admit, I wouldn't want to watch movies on it, but it'd be good for... It's got a DVB-H tuner in it?
It doesn't have a tuner
in it,
as far as I know.
Yeah, that's a downfall. That means you can watch digital TV whilst you're driving.
Video podcasting is going to be the thing of the future, though. You'll be able to download your episode of Home and Away that you missed and watch it on the train. That's the sort of thing it'll end up being useful.
Yeah, and if you have a lot of, if you do a lot of international travelling, a lot of flights where you're spending lots of downtime on aeroplanes, it'd be great just to drop in your shirt pocket.
Well, exactly. All right. So where do you get them from? You said they get them here?
We can buy them here in Australia from MStation, which is mstation.com.au.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
And the website of the week this week is one which is near and dear to my heart, especially after what I've been going through in the last few weeks. If you ever have a telephone, and Dr. Ron, you've probably been here and done this. Want to know what a phone number is of a service that you sort of go, where does this go? Like if you're in the office and you're the person that wants to plug a phone in and see what the phone number is and all that sort of stuff. Did you know that there is a website which actually tells you all about the phone number that you're on? And it's made by actually a third-party company, which I thought was quite good. The website is accesscoms.com.au/reference/testnumb. That's testnumb.htm. And what it does is it tells you all the IVR numbers that you can ring up and find out things from different carriers and, like, you know, whether your C&D's on, whether your number is connected, whether your service is activated and all that sort of stuff. Very handy for tracing things back.
Yeah, it's a good little resource for technical people, but you might find it interesting to have a play around.
Just one of those things. So if you ever want to know what number you're on, it's 12722123.
That's the robot in Australia, what's known in the industry as the talking robot.
It is. Yeah. So there you go. That's the Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
There is a fine line between genius and madness. Shoot.
Missed it by that much.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
An American woman who decided to Google her fiancé recently just found him on Google.
Oh, good. That's good. Yep.
As one of America's most wanted.
That's bad.
Oh, no, that's not good.
For the murder of a police informant.
That's really bad.
That's really bad. Can you imagine? Looked him up on Google.
His name wasn't Smith, was it? Didn't get the wrong... Like, there could be millions of Smiths out there, no?
No, it was a fairly distinctive name.
Oh, that's bad.
Gave her something to think about, as you can imagine. After being initially conflicted, about a week later she did the right thing and turned him into police.
Oh, so the moral of the story is if you're getting married, then Google your fiancé's name before you say I do.
That's it, yeah. Oh, it's fascinating what you find when you Google people.
Go earlier than that. I'd go back to when your kids are going out. This is what I intend to do with my girls. You watch out, you boys out there. I'll be Googling your name and seeing where you come up. So make sure your friends don't put false and misleading or steal your identity and put you up on MySpace or MyFace or whatever it is.
MyFace. Maybe Adult Matchmaker should have a Google link as well, so you could just double check before you answer the onlines.
You can also Google yourself and just make sure that you haven't
That's scary.
Got some misinformation about yourself out there.
If it's in a wiki, you can go and change it.
Yeah.
Well, it is, isn't it? That's a good thing about wikis. Hey, you've been listening to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. Dr. Ron over there, and expert opinion from Graham Callaghan there too about...
Dr. Iron now.
Dr. Iron, yeah, good. Hey, tell us what's coming up next week. You had a chat to Microsoft recently.
I did. Mr. Oscar Trimboli spoke to me about the new Unified Communications Server product, which Microsoft has just released. Okay. So I'll be having a chat to Oscar next week.
What is Unified Communications?
Unified Communications, well, we'll just have to tune in, find out all about it. It's a new corporate way of handling telephone traffic.
Fantastic. All right, we'll look forward to that next week. Have a chat to Microsoft about their products. Once again, feedback@techtalkradio.com.au is our email address. We'll take the spam filter off for a while and see how it goes. Hi, Malcolm, we got your email there too. And what was I going to say? The phone number is 1-300-664-882.
And if you're calling from outside of Australia, it's +613-901-253-62.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Pay political announcement. All right, till next week. Bye for now.
Tech Talk Radio is brought to you each and every week by a band of dedicated professionals from within the broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer and host Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, panellists Sir Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins. Our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Production facilities are courtesy of Evolving Communications, podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night from 8 p.m. The producers wish to thank all the stations that are taking the show, including 3WBC, 3XX, Cairns FM and 4KZ. For syndication, sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9018 9043 or visit the website techtalkradio.com.au for more information. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.